Hello, everybody. This is Jeremy Brown coming to you from the Grady County Jail in Oklahoma, where I've been for the last 7 days. It is now August 21st. And so even though we are inside of, 15 working days, I think we're down to 10 working days before the start of my trial. I've spent the last 7 days in Oklahoma, separated from my discovery, separated from my trial notes, separated from all my evidence, and separated from my attorney completely, with the exception of recorded phone calls, of which we give a message that it's between an attorney and a client. But since when is a warning from an American citizen to the government ever been heeded? But that's where we are, and so I wanted to take the opportunity to provide this brief update on what we're currently facing. And if you might notice, I'm a little grayer, a little paler, a little skinnier. But I wanted to provide this update as we approach trial date of September 4th, just to reiterate what we're facing, and what the links the government is going through in order to prevent me from testifying. Now, keep in mind, I'm facing two misdemeanors. That's it. Two misdemeanors, each punishable by no more than a year in jail. Okay, and so and yet the extent the government is going to, in order to prevent or to make as difficult as possible for me to defend myself against these two misdemeanors, because they know that that's not what I'm going to do. What I'm going to do is I'm going to testify to the truth and the reality of January 6th and my involvement, not only with the Oath Keepers, but also my involvement with the federal government as they attempted to recruit me prior to the January 6th event, unbeknownst to me at the time. But of course, it became very clear after the events of January 6th what had happened. So they know this. They know that I have a recording of this, and they do not want my story to get out there. And I've made it very widely known that I'm utilizing this opportunity to get on the stand in a misdemeanor trial to make the truth known to the American people on the record under oath. All right. And so the government is doing everything that they possibly can to prevent me from doing that. And their main thing is to interrupt my ability to prepare for trial, to move me into a controlled environment known as the DC Gulag, or what's also known as the DC Federal Jail. So we really are approaching a major mission decision line for me, because I've been waging this war for almost 4 years now. And through the generous donations of very few American people, we've been able to stay just barely in front of the financial tools that the government are using against me, which are the massive expenditures in legal representation, the thousands of dollars it costs to get transcripts in order to file appeals, or even to just, publicize what was said at a trial that most Americans are not allowed to even attend. And so we've been able to stay ahead of that, but here we're approaching trial. My defense funds are fairly depleted, and the government knows all this. I mean, even right now, as we speak, the government is very likely involved in the shutting down of social media accounts, the interference technologically of even people that are associated with me that have mentioned our website or posted about us are now having these unexplained technical difficulties. And they're really not unexplained. I mean, this is what the Twitter files have revealed, that there is an unholy alliance between big tech and the federal government, and they will allow what they want to allow, and they will disallow what they don't want to allow. So obviously the story of Jeremy Brown is very much not allowable. And so we're starting to see that. And really this all started as we started to cover these last 3 weeks of events, the posting of legal documents, the posting of legal filings. And so I want to go over what exactly has happened in the last 3 weeks to get us to this point. And then I kind of just want to explain to you, you know, what I am facing as part of this mission decision line, because a mission decision line is where it's the point of no return, right? You're on the helicopter, you're flying toward your target. Maybe you lost one bird en route. You, as the commander, have to make the decision. Can we continue the mission? Will it be successful, or do we need to turn back? So this is really what a mission decision line is, and this is what I'm facing personally. It's what I'm facing financially. It's what I'm facing through, you know, my selection of legal counsel going forward, because, you know, the government has unlimited resources. I think there's like 15 different prosecutors on this case versus my one trial attorney. And, you know, I don't have the ability to fly those 15 prosecutors to random cities all over the United States a week before trial, but the government does have the ability to do that to me. So about 3 weeks ago, the government came to me with a plea deal. Now, keep in mind, there are two things that the government wants out of all this. One, they want me completely silenced at all costs, right? And then two, they want me in their control, because the entire movement of me to DC is so that they can then delay proceedings, they can stack charges. But see, I'll be in DC, and anything could happen in DC. I could fall in the shower, I could accidentally miss my mouth brushing my teeth and stab myself in the neck 45 times. Anything can happen in the control of this tyrannical and evil federal government. And so this is what they want. The idea that they are going to proceed to trial on September 4th is merely just a ruse, right? It was the ruse used to trigger my movement from Florida to D.C. But now already the government is positioning and posturing to not go to trial on September 4th. So let me just go over the last 3 weeks. So about 3 weeks ago, they came with a plea agreement. And that plea agreement, we went over in detail with Mick Rosario from, I believe the name of her show is Intentional. And the interviews with Mick going through the plea deal have been posted, and you can certainly listen to them. And I recommend that you listen to them so that you understand what those who are reported to have pled guilty to, what they have gone through, right? Because I go line by line through the plea agreement, and I explain that these aren't plea agreements, right? These are struggle sessions. These are Soviet-style tactics of getting you to lay on the table while the executioner offers you a quick death or a slow and painful disembowelment, right? So, but the government came with one of these plea agreements to me, and basically they wanted to drop it from two misdemeanors to one little misdemeanor. Just one little misdemeanor, Jeremy. If you just plead to just one little misdemeanor, then we can make this all go away, as long as you don't read the plea agreement. It says you admit that everything the government has said is true. You admit that our damage estimates are near $3 million, which is completely ridiculous. I don't know who, I mean, clearly they haven't talked to the Biden administration to be able to get some of the cheap labor coming across the southern border to do the repairs. The labor costs would have been in the hundreds of thousands of dollars. But this is what a plea agreement is. It is you waiving your rights to appeal. It is you basically saying, I'm ugly, you're pretty, I'm dumb, you're smart. All of these things, right? All in exchange for us stopping the destruction of your life, right? And so, of course, as I've said all along, I will accept no plea deal because I've broken no law. The government knows this. I know this. They know that I know this, and they know that's why I continue to force these issues of trial. This is the second plea agreement that the government has offered. Back in my felony trial, they offered to basically allow me to walk out scot-free with time served if I just did not make them prove that those grenades and the classified documents were mine. Because, see, they knew that that evidence was not real, and so they certainly did not want it to go before the American people on the record under oath and be part of a trial transcript that is now part of a 11th Circuit Court of Appeals appeal. But I turned them down after 14 months in maximum security. I went to trial, right? And of course, you know, they hammered me with 87 months in federal prison, of which I've served almost 36 months now. So the plea agreement was offered. And of course, with every plea agreement, there's the veiled threat of if Mr. Brown doesn't take this single misdemeanor with 0 to 6 months possible time, well, we could certainly, maybe, I don't know, find seditious conspiracy charges lurking in the bushes. You know, that would be 20 years, possibly, the evil prosecutor says. But their threats are useless against me because I know they can't prove that. All they can do is put it before a corrupt D.C. Circuit judge, which will, of course, convict me because that's what his job is to do. But see, that doesn't frighten me because the law is the law, and we're utilizing the law through a lose in order to win strategy. So we know we're going to lose at the trial level because that's the way it's designed to do. We're fighting to the appeal. So the plea agreement was offered. We turned it down. Then next came our motion to stay proceedings pending appeal. So my appeal in the 11th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals is not only appealing the search warrant, but it's also appealing the probable cause that was used to obtain the search warrant as well as the arrest warrant. It also is appealing issues that arose at trial through Fifth Amendment violations by the prosecutors. And so there are what are called collateral estoppel issues, meaning issues that will be affected by that appeal that will also affect this trial. And so therefore, any reasonable judge in a reasonable court that follows the law would not proceed forward, much like in the recent U.S. versus Rahimi gun law case, right? This gun case had gone to the Supreme Court. So therefore, federal courts across the land stayed decisions that had issues that could be affected by that Supreme Court ruling. Why? Because a normal judge doesn't want to be overturned or proceed with a trial that will then be quickly appealed once a ruling proving that a piece of that trial or case is now no longer valid law, right? So this is a common practice. And so we filed for this motion to stay pending appeal, to which the judge says in the hearing, of which we're working on getting the transcripts and you'll be able to read for yourself, he says all what I just told you. He says that if there are issues affecting the evidence that may be used at trial, then certainly he would see fit to rule in favor of our stay. But then the government says, oh, well, Your Honor, we're not going to use any of the evidence from the search warrant, so we can proceed. We'll file a little notice, which doesn't even say that they won't use the evidence. It just says that they reserve the right to use it in a different way, right? So it's a notice of a non-notice, right? But the judge admits it, then the prosecution says, oh, well, we're not going to use that evidence. But again, this wasn't the only issue on appeal. And then the judge says something very profound. I haven't read the brief, meaning he's ruling on whether or not the case should proceed or not based on whether or not issues in the appeal would affect the trial, but yet states on the record that he's not even read the brief. And then he denies our stay motion. So that triggered us to our next strategy, which was filing a Federal Rule of Criminal Procedure 43B2 notice. The Federal Rules of Criminal Procedure basically are the rules of how a court is supposed to operate. Most of them violate constitutional rights, but hey, since when does that matter, right? But 43B2 is in reference to a defendant's presence and when it is necessary. So 43A states when a defendant must be present. So any federal trial or things like that. But 43B is when the defendant doesn't have to be present. And it's things like organizational type cases like the NRA being sued or Purdue Pharma, right? You're not going to have the entire company of Purdue Pharma in the courtroom. No, you're going to have the legal representation. But then it's if you're charged with misdemeanor offenses. Why? Because the federal court system deems misdemeanors not important enough to tie up precious Precious, I'm using my special forces air quotations, you can't see them. Precious court resources having a trial for misdemeanors, right? In fact, most people have never even heard of federal misdemeanors, but trust me, they exist. I'll show you. And so we file this 43B2 notice. And what this says is that, one, I don't even have to be present at trial. But if I do want to be present at trial, I have the right to be present via video teleconference. So we file this notice stating that we would like to, I consent to waive my right to a jury trial. We requested a bench trial, making the judge, putting the judge on the blame line for the verdict, and that we're waiving our right to appear in person and appear via video teleconference. Well, that's the federal rules of criminal procedure. But see, in the D.C. district, the little tiny 10 by 10 mile district of D.C., they have their own little rule. They've made their own little rule in violation of the 14th Amendment's Equal Protection Clause. And it says, well, the government gets the opportunity to oppose your right to choose how you proceed with your defense, right? And so, of course, the government opposes it. And so, therefore, that triggers us to file an emergency motion. And this emergency motion is requesting the judge to rule in our favor to support our video teleconference and our bench trial. So we file that motion. And again, these motions are all posted. We're 100% transparent for you all to see. And you can see our arguments, and then you can see the government's response is all about, well, the jury needs to be able to see your demeanor and this and that. But see, the federal rules of criminal procedure come about through a panel of judges, a committee of judges that say, this is why we have this rule. And the argument the government used for 43B was actually the argument for 43A, why the judges on the panel that come up with these rules say you need to be present, and one of them is to be able to judge demeanor and things like that. But they intentionally left misdemeanors out of this. And yet, this is exactly the argument, that the jury needs to be able to see Mr. Brown's demeanor. Except we didn't ask for a jury trial. We asked for a bench trial. So the judge says, well, could you clarify, are you opposing the bench trial? So if you read the government's response, almost their entire response is about whether or not my demeanor should be seen by the jury. But then the government says, oh, no, we're not opposing the bench trial. So it wipes out their entire response. So as we're waiting for this emergency motion to be ruled, because, of course, the judge is on vacation, right, because we have to rush to trial, but we have to take vacation before we rush to trial. So while the judge is on vacation and while we have a pending emergency motion to keep me at Citrus County Jail in Florida, I talked to my attorney on Wednesday night. She says, call me tomorrow at 8:30 in the morning, Thursday morning. Don't worry. There's been no ruling by the judge, so you will not be moved tonight. This is the last word I get from my attorney. 3 hours later, they come and they move me. Just after midnight, I pack up all 7 boxes of my discovery, approximately 30,000 pages of discovery, 6 terabytes of digital discovery, all of my trial notes, all of my property, and I'm whisked to a hallway to be sent on an airplane, Conair, to Oklahoma, where I have sat for the last 7 days. All right. So, with the emergency motion pending, a hearing is set for Tuesday, which was yesterday. Now, I demand to be present at all my hearings so that I can catch all these things. And so, of course, my attorney says, oh, 10 o'clock tomorrow. All right. But that's Eastern time. Well, the people here in Oklahoma, as we would say in the South, bless their heart. Apparently, they don't understand that there's actual other time zones in the world. And so they get me at 9:55 Central time, of which I explained, you do realize you're an hour late. And they're like, no. It says 10 o'clock in the email. Well, we get there. The Zoom says that it was clearly scheduled at 9 a.m. Central Time, which would be 10 a.m. Eastern Time. And so I missed that hearing. But no worries. In the hearing, of course, we're once again ruled against. And the judge himself says on the record, I need to see Mr. Brown's demeanor. Now, remember, I'm facing two misdemeanor trespassing charges. So the judge needs to see my demeanor to whether or not I knowingly trespassed. And so he denies the motion, of which now we have filed a notice to appeal the ruling on the stay, and we have filed a notice to appeal the ruling on the emergency motion ruling. Now, don't forget, we had motion deadlines as well. So all of our motions were supposed to be submitted by Friday. Well, they moved me Wednesday night, Thursday morning. So I've not been able to review these motions. They've had to be submitted without my approval or even reading them, right? So this again is another violation of my Fifth Amendment right to due process and my Sixth Amendment right to the assistance of counsel. And they've also since made two additional discovery drops. Now remember, we're within 15 days. Right now, I think we're within 10 days, 10 working days of trial. And the federal government, after 3 years of incarceration and preparing for two misdemeanors, are now dropping all types of discovery against me. Now, this is really setting up the scenario for additional charges. This is what they want to do. See, their argument is, well, Mr. Brown, even though he had permits, even though he was told by the President of the United States to go to the Capitol, even though he remained outside the Capitol, even though he never encountered any law enforcement, he never violated any cordon, signage, or any barricades. Well, his intent was all based on the Oath Keepers' unarmed overthrow of the federal government. See, this is their angle. This is what they are planning to argue at trial, which I welcome them because that's absurd. And I will get the opportunity to expose how absurd that is because they have to actually provide some level of evidence. And it's not like I'm a used car salesman. See, it's easy to take the words of a used car salesman and claim that he was going to unarmed overthrow the government because he doesn't have 20 years of experience in actually overthrowing governments and never went on any actual missions, and so likely never went on any missions unarmed, right? So their complete basis of their argument is absurd, but this is what they're doing. They continually pile all this stuff on in order to make us think that there's these follow-on charges that we're going to charge you with seditious conspiracy, which I welcome because see, then they have to actually open up their files to me as to what they have. Now, so let's see. The additional discovery, the judge stated that he needs to see my facial expression. And then, of course, the attorney after the prosecutors after the hearing on Tuesday stated, you know, that plea deal still open. See, this is what they do. They pile it on, they pile it on. Oh, are you tired of losing? Are you tired of everything that you're doing being denied? Are you tired of all the expenditures, the thousands of dollars that you're doling out? See, I'm gonna have to pay thousands of dollars in hotel, transportation costs for not only myself or my legal team, but for my witnesses and everything, right? So are you ready to give up yet? Because if you are, we've got this plea deal for you. Remember, plea deal, this could all go away. The pain could stop, William Wallace. Just say the words. Just say the words, right? So this is what is happening. And this is where we are. Again, you see, I'm here in Oklahoma with my gray hair and my sweatshirt. And they're preparing to crush every opportunity that we put forward, right? And again, they are not concerned with two misdemeanor counts, right? They're concerned with two things. One, they want me in the DC jail at all costs because there they can control. One, all right, they'll have full control over me. They'll be able to limit my communications. They'll be able to limit my access to my attorneys. Two, they could hurt me. William, I don't know if you know this or not, but this government is well known for shady, shady behaviors, right? Luckily, I'm not in Yemen or they might drone strike me, all right? If there weren't so many illegal immigrants around, they might do that. But see, they probably don't want to hurt them, so therefore I'm safe here, all right? And then three, they've separated me from everything, right? From my support network, from my attorneys, from all my discovery. And then, of course, they don't want me to testify against their fake story. they know that I can prove that they're lying. So what they intend to do is, now that the process of moving me to DC is underway, now is when they'll start to say, oh, we have all this additional discovery. Do you need a continuance? Or they'll say, oh, we have a superseding indictment, so therefore we're going to have to delay this trial, or we're going to actually create a whole new trial and push things further. And I could end up being in DC for now years and years, as the process is the punishment. And so this is the reality of what I'm going through over two misdemeanors, of which I've been in jail for 3 years now. So all of this is because they want me to plead, and they just want me to go away, as if I never existed. But if I don't, well, then they will just keep me in jail, fighting and stacking fake charge after fake charge until I run out of money or I run out of the will to fight. And they're close on both. I mean, right now we have $18,000 in our defense fund, and that was before paying trial costs. That's before paying these two appeals of the stay and the emergency motion, and it's before the travel costs associated with the DC trial. And then, of course, sentencing will be additional legal fees as well. And so, yeah, we're hurting. I'm hurting. I've been in here for almost 36 months. I really am at a mission decision line, because, see, on March 5th of 2021, and even the days and weeks preceding the day that I went public, I contemplated the results of going public against the FBI, against this federal government, knowing, having been an employee of this federal government for 20 years in special forces, that what they're capable of. And I it wasn't a struggle. I knew that I needed to do it, but I also struggled with what it would mean for me, what it would mean for my family, for my friends. And so that night, I literally cried to other special forces buddies of mine, because having to accept the fact of what I was involved in and knowing what I had to do, it bothered me. But I did so with the understanding that the American people, once they heard the truth and once they saw what this federal government was capable of and had engaged in, well, that they would stand up and they would not stand for it. See, this is the America that I believed that I lived in. But over the course of almost 4 years now, since I went public with that recording on March 5th of 2021, that's not what I've experienced. I mean, I've experienced apathy, complacency, ambivalence, aloofness. There are a very, very proportionately a very few that have donated. I mean, again, we've been able to keep our head above water financially through the generous donations of those very few. But what we're engaged in here is going to take more than a few, and it's going to take more than tweeting out a hashtag or a video that you saw. It's going to take actual accountability for those who are in charge of this mess that has been created by this overbearing government. And so maybe I was foolish to think that the American people would, once they were exposed to the truth, would not stand for it, regardless if you're a Republican or Democrat or transgender or whatever. It doesn't matter. Liberty is liberty, right? The FBI, look, listen to the recording. They say, oh, we do this to both sides, right? To right and left, okay? So this isn't a Trump thing. This isn't a Biden thing or a Harris thing or an Elon Musk thing. This is an American rights thing. This is a liberty thing. They will do this to me. They will do this to you. They will do this to your transgender boxing champion from the Olympics. I mean, they will do this to anyone. And so we must all come together. And I thought that the American people would come together. But here we are 3 years from now, and we can't even get members of Congress to get involved and ask questions or even talk to me. People still, I've yet to have any mainstream conservative voice have me on their show and talk about me and question me, prove me wrong, question my statements. I mean, hell, I've wanted to raise enough money to offer rewards to anybody who can prove me wrong on anything that I've said over the last 3 years. And yet, none of this has happened. I mean, and it's discouraging. And as I sit here and I have the executioner standing above me as I lay on the table saying, it can all end. It can all end. All you have to do is just sign right here. Why shouldn't I sign? I mean, for 3 years, I've asked people to do something. I'm in jail. All I can do is talk. And for 3 years, people have clapped and said, oh, we support you. And they've sent nice notes and they've mailed letters. But what's happened at the DOJ? What's happened at the FBI? What's happened in Congress? I mean, if Trump, a billionaire, goes out and says that he's a political prisoner, he raises millions of dollars in hours. And yet, I'm an actual political prisoner. I actually had handcuffs on a lot. He's never had handcuffs on. I mean, I'll take 0.1% of the support given to the billionaire, and not just me, but all of the billionaires, working class supporters that have gone through this. I'm just one of many. The difference is I'm the one that has the recording of the FBI setting up January 6th. I'm the one with the recording of the FBI trying to get a 20-year special forces soldier to infiltrate a group of Americans that had never broken any law nor been accused of breaking any law. I'm the one that knows it was a trap and has the evidence to prove it. And so after 3 years in jail and 4 years, almost 4 years, screaming at the top of my lungs that this is happening, yeah, it's appealing to think, man, if this could all just end. And I'm not saying that I'm going to accept a plea deal from the government, but I lay in my bed and I think, well, if nobody's going to do anything, I mean, if I was screaming on a mountaintop and there were hordes of Americans going to their congressional offices and demanding something be done about this rogue FBI and DOJ, well, then I would keep going. Because, see, my trials are just exposing the nonsense of this federal government, right? At my expense and the expense of those who have given to support our cause. And so if these things were happening, there'd be no doubt. There would be nothing that could stop me. I would be like a bull charging through the streets in Spain. And yet, that's not what's happening. I, in essence, am a billboard in the middle of the forest that no one sees, no one reads, and therefore no one is able to do anything. And so when I have a government that's saying, we're just going to continue to crush you until you quit, or you could just sign right here and it can all just stop and you can somewhat go about your merry way. Because the bottom line is, my Tampa case is no big deal. I'm sentenced to 87 months. It's going to get overturned on appeal. See, when you throw together a setup at the last minute, you make a lot of mistakes and those mistakes come back to bite you. They just hoped that I wouldn't be able to appeal it, wouldn't be able to afford it, or would not be smart enough to follow through with my right to appeal. But even that process, I mean, I might not get resolution on that until February. And so what I'm saying is, I have to decide, is this fight worth fighting? And does anybody care? Am I just fighting a Pyrrhic victory, fighting for a Pyrrhic victory? Because, see, I know what the truth is. I don't need to prove to myself that the government did this. I don't need to prove to myself why they did it. I know why. That's the reason why I came forward. I'm doing this for an American people that seem to not really have much of a concern about their own liberties, that aren't even active enough to get up and go to their local congressional office and schedule a meeting with their rep and say, hey, have you heard about this Jeremy Brown guy? They're not even involved enough to call in to their favorite radio show, which they love to spout the talking points of their favorite radio host, but they won't call in and say, hey, I live in Tampa, or I live in Nebraska, or I live in Virginia, or I live in Texas. Have you heard about this Jeremy Brown guy that has a recording of the FBI prior to January 6th? I'm just not seeing this level of fight in the very people of which I'm reliant on. And, notwithstanding the one, two, three, four, the handful of people that have been fighting all along the way for me, they're also frustrated and confused and bewildered and exacerbated by the lack of effort. I mean, my legal representation has been mediocre at best, and that's really, really being kind, with the exception of my appeals attorney, Michael Ufferman, which has been worth every single penny that we've had to conjure up to pay him. But I don't mean to sound whiny, but I'm sitting here in Oklahoma and I'm faced with being moved to a jail of which I will likely be targeted, where I will be harassed and messed with, if not hurt. And, you can say whatever you want to say. Oh, that's ridiculous. Okay, well, you're welcome to come down here and offer yourself up to swap out with me and prove me wrong. But this is the reality of it. And then I'm faced with, if you just say that you were trespassing on public land with a permit, with credentials, with orders, with the schedule of events, with the police chief stating that, there were events scheduled and that it was open to the public. I mean, if you just admit that you did something that you, in essence, if you lie to the American people and claim that you were a trespasser, we'll make the pain stop. And so I guess this is just my last plea to you as fellow Americans that what's going to happen to me in the coming days, weeks, and years is a direct result of, what you guys all do, what you guys allow. They say you get the government you deserve. And I think that that's absolutely true. I think we are being subjected to the amount of tyranny that we are willing to put up with. As Thomas Jefferson said, how far will tyranny push? It will push as far as you let it. And so, I guess this is just my last ditch plea. Help me make a decision on whether or not I should look out for myself, take the easy way out, or if I should continue to fight in hopes that something will be done to correct the situation. Because it's not easy. It's not been easy. It's not going to be easy. And look, I think the government wants me silenced bad enough that they might just give me exactly what I asked for. But I don't want to ask for that. I want to fight. I want to win. They don't give Green Berets out, as participation trophies. They give them out to guys that don't quit, that always find a way to win, right? Always find a way to win. And, that's my mentality, but also I have to, I don't want to spend 20 years in prison on principle. This is what I'm facing. So I wanted to take this time and let you know that we are approaching a critical point in this journey for me, and I really, really need your help. So if you see this video, please pass it along to your friends. Don't think that you can post it on Facebook. They're not going to allow you. X isn't going to put it on a thumb drive and put it in the mail, right? Have a party. Invite your friends over for some Little Caesars pizza and watch it on the big screen. Do whatever you have to do, but I need your help either in this fight, or I need your help in saying, Jeremy, you've done a good job up to this point, but I think it's time for you to ride off into the sunset, and we'll be okay with that. And as long as they keep Bachelor and multiple football leagues, we'll all be fine. I mean, think about it. I have raised about $300,000, maybe $300,000 in every city around the country on any given Sunday during football season. That more money than that is spent on hot dogs and beer in just one city on one Sunday at one football game. And that is depressing. And so, you know, think about that as you think about me here in Oklahoma City getting ready to go to DC jail. And, you know, if you guys say fight, then that's what I'll do, because that's what I swore to do when I took the oath. But if you guys are ready to just, you know, mail it in, phone it in, tweet it in, let me know, and I will do what I can to get back to my life. So this is Jeremy Brown, political prisoner of a war that nobody realizes that we're in, signing off here from the Grady County Jail. Thank you.